Hello, everyone, and welcome to our NEPT Foundations. It's the call where we do the Q&A, questions, things, anything that's coming up related to the content and curriculum of the program. So this is not necessarily the calls where we go over patient cases, et cetera. It's usually where we're, you know, we're wanting to just clarify various content pieces. We started these calls at the beginning of this year because a lot of folks were saying that they didn't feel like it was appropriate to ask questions about content and about various things in the program on those other calls because we were making those clinical. But seriously, questions, all questions go. So what we typically do is we devote the beginning part of any call with that topic that it's supposed to be for, whether it's cases or labs or content and curriculum. And then if there is time, then we'll answer any other questions that you want. So we want to stay focused on our topic at hand, which in this case is content and curriculum. So we've got 12 modules in the foundations part of the program. Most of them are open at this point, and we have a couple more that are in process. And it looks like a couple of people came in on backup pins, so I hopefully can figure out who those people are. So the way that we work these calls is that we go ahead and do a hand raise, and usually I have you do any number from 1 to 5. Seriously, sometimes I'll divide that out and say, well, if you have a question here, a comment there. So really this is about questions and comments. So if you want to share what you've learned or what was your biggest takeaway from any particular module, want to hear that. If you have questions about any of the module, questions about how to apply what you learned in those modules to what's going on, then go ahead and raise your hand. And it looks like we have a couple of hands raised already. We have Tony, who came up first, and then backup pin. So if you didn't come in on your own pin, I'm going to call you backup pin, and I'm going to find out who you are in just a moment. So I will start with Tony.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie. I hit a number by accident. I'm actually in between appointments. Thought I would sneak in this call.
I have you. Do you have any questions or comments about any of the content so far, any of the modules, anything you want clarification on, or anything at all?
Not at this time. Something may come up to me later, but not right now. Nope.
Okay. Great. Well, it's good to hear your voice anyway.
Good to hear yours as well. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So that was Tony. I'll put your hand down. And then if you didn't call in on your own, I'm going to open up. If you've got your hand raised, I'm opening up your line right now, and I would appreciate it if you tell me who you are to start with. So, hi. Raised your hand with a 3. Might have yourself on mute because it's awfully quiet over there. So just hit unmute on your telephone. No?
No.
Okay, there you are. Hi, this is Melody.
Hi, Melody. Oh, there's a bad echo in the background. Are you listening in?
Okay, let's see if I can hear you. I have you on the phone as a backup because I couldn't hear very well on the computer.
Okay, so turn down the volume on one of them on the computer.
Oh, I got off the phone. Now I'm on the computer.
Okay, good. Yeah, I hear you. I'm gonna
have to
so hi, Melody.
I don't know why I'm going to plug you into some speakers so I can hear you better. Okay.
I can raise my volume if it's me. Let me go see if I can, if this helps. Okay. Is that any better for you?
Yeah, it is.
Raise your volume, too. There we go. All right. Perfect. Hi.
Hi. I just have, I don't know, I love the curriculum so far. Just I'm really, really enjoying it. And but I had some questions. I'm in the macronutrients. I've learned more about the B vitamins, and wow, I knew it was awesome. But I'm kind of as a clinical herbalist for the last 16 years, you know, you can be allopathic in that too. And so I'm one that, you know, I don't really take a whole lot of things, you know, unless I need to, even if it's good for me. So I am wondering how you would approach taking these vitamins, and because when you read about them and you study them, it's like, oh my goodness, everyone needs these. So I know with food, we always go to food first, but most people are not getting it.
Right.
I get referred to me a lot of chemo-induced neuropathy patients, and we've had success with them. And of course, you know, I've been trained, you know, B1, B6, and so that's just the standard, like, rule. But after studying, it's kind of like, well, I think before we start, like, giving them therapeutic doses of one over the other, they should just be on a B complex. I mean, so I'm just kind of asking, how do we direct this?
Yes. No, totally, totally. Well, first of all, yes, I think that we shouldn't just be loading individual Bs because we read it and said, oh, that person might need this or this person might need that. Oh, that's good, because I do get patients come in that they've read everything under the sun, and they come in and they're taking 47 different nutrients, and it's a bit much. It's not good for them. It gets confusing. So I, with Bs, I always like to have a B complex there. But like you said, food first. We always go to food first. But in a situation like that where we're talking chemo-induced neuropathy, this is an abnormal situation where
right.
we need to respond supplementation-wise. If it's because they're not absorbing well or because they don't eat, you know, a good healthy diet, it's a lot different situation, and I look at it more like, okay, we're going to temporarily give you this while we work on your diet here. And, you know, herbs have a lot of nutrients in them too. So another thing when you say, oh, I think this person might need this, is to look. There's a really great book, you might know it, Nutritional Herbology.
Yeah.
It's relatively old, but it's still very valid, and it gives you like, oh, this one's good in iron and this one's good in that. So that's another way to approach it. I like to do vitamin supplementation in a form that's going to be the most readily absorbed by the body, especially in somebody who's had chemo where everything's being destroyed. So I like to do liquids. I always like to do liquids.
Yes, I love your Rush Sun Warrior that you talked about. I've been taking it. I do really like that. So if someone's just taking, so basically, even with the neuropathies, and yes, here again, it's huge. But if they're not even, I have just started patients really on just start with the B complex and then let that get into their system, kind of like a platform.
Yep.
And then I've been adding on, now we can go ahead and add, you know, the B1, the B6. But I'm kind of questioning the B12 because a lot of this is, you know, it's the fingers and the toes, you know, the feet and neuropathies, which is B12 too.
Absolutely. The B12 is critical. And if they've had, if they've done, even if they're eating like, you know, 14 pounds of meat a day with plenty of B12, if they've had chemotherapy and their digestive lining is shot, they're unlikely to be really making intrinsic factor to be able to actually absorb.
That's true.
Right?
Okay.
So I think B12 is critical. I think that as a basic, and beyond, the Rush is great because it's all the vitamins and minerals, but it is a relatively low dose one.
Yeah.
There are some B complexes in liquid form. Some of them I don't like so much because they add like sugars and sweeteners and things like that. But I know that Premier Research Labs makes a really nice B complex liquid. I've had good results with that. I remember having one situation where somebody came. It was actually my brother, and he basically said, "I figured out that if I take the B vitamins before I go out drinking, I don't get a hangover." And if I take it, like, right after I wake up in the morning, right away, I get all this energy. And he actually explained his whole method of titration and, you know, how it your urine turns yellow when you do B vitamins. He goes, well, I don't want to spend a lot of money wasting my urine. So this was really cool, though. I thought it was quite brilliant. He said I would take whatever the dose was on the bottle, and then I'd go, oh, my urine's yellow, so I'd back off a little, till it turned pale again, and then I bumped it up a little, so I just had a tinge of yellow, so that way I figured out I wasn't wasting a lot of money. I'm like, holy cow, it's not a bad idea, actually, right? Because, you know, we know that when you spill it, it's going to turn the urine color. But anyway, that's beside the point. But I know that this one, they work when you do it in liquid form. And I've had people say, oh, my God, you know, I've been taking B vitamins for years and suddenly I take this. That's a good one. There's a company in England which doesn't have too bad a shipping rate. I know a lot of people have gotten it. It's called Metabolics, and they actually have all your individual bees in the liquid, in the different forms. And, you know, you always want to get the active form, but with B12 you have to be careful with methylation. You know, you don't want to over-methylate them. But, yeah, that
right.
has a lot of good ones. They have a complex, plus they have all the individuals. So they'll have B1, B6, and they'll have them in the active forms. So that's a good way to do it. Another way to do it, too, is to really look at the symptom list that we've given you in the, I believe it's
right.
in that history taking. And we have a nice chart, and you can just kind of go through there and see where they're, what stands out as far as their best. Obviously, knowing the pathophysiology of, you know, chemotherapy is going to warp this, and they've got neuropathy, so that. But there's maybe some others that stand out also from there. So I've had people who are on multiple, you know, four or five, actually, of the individuals plus the B-complex.
Okay, daily. So you're not, like, you're not staggering it, like take the multi and then the next day take, you know, the liposomal, maybe
B12. Nope, not if you really need it, especially in a situation like that where you want to get them balanced as quickly as you can. You know, of course, you're working on the food, but if they're not digesting their food because they're just finding shot, you got to get them in there as best they can. Some of them do best with a B, like a shot, an IV, right?
Yeah.
A Myers cocktail or something like that, which, you know, is probably outside of your scope, so you don't get to do that, but you may have practitioners you can
send them. Yeah, refer them in. Okay, so you would go ahead and just over, you know, because I know that there's a company that we've talked about on these phone calls that maybe it's the Seeking Health that has the B-.
Yes.
That you can play with that, but actually for someone that needs a therapeutic dose, you think a good just be complex, and then you can add the others on top.
Right. And if you're doing something like the if you're concerned that they're, I don't know if you know their methylation status, so if you're concerned that they're going to over-methylate, then what you can do is do something like the B-, or get something which is a lower dose overall B-complex, which I think that the Premier has very small amounts of, you know, in the microgram amounts. You don't want to be giving somebody that you don't know their methylation status like 5 grams of B12 because you could put them into anxiety, and you don't want to do that.
Okay.
Be careful. But, yeah, you can start them with that. I always stagger adding the supplements, not necessarily the taking of them, but I'll stagger the adding just to see how they respond. So I love taking the liposomals for the B12. And I've only seen B12 and folate in liposomal, but there may be others. I know that.
Yeah, I have the Seeking Health, with that L5 MTHF.
Yes, and then that way you can titrate it up very gradually. For people who are super, super sensitive to everything, then you might not do the B-complex, but you just wanted to time add all the Bs in there to see how they react. So it just depends. I've never done that. I've always been able to get away with putting them on B-complex. So I've had people who are so sensitive to them that even a liquid liquid B-complex would send them into symptoms, and they would actually, but that's the beauty of the liquids, right? You can dilute it. So I had one person who would take a dropper bottle and she'd put in a couple of droppers full of the B-complex, and then she'd fill it the rest of it with water. And then she'd just take a few drops of that, and then she'd gradually titrate it up because her system was so sensitive to everything.
Wow.
Yeah, but I would always stagger it adding. If you can add a B-complex and they do fine with it, but I would do it for 3 or 4 days and just see and make sure. And then add the individual ones, you know, highest priority first. Especially the neuropathies, you know, with the B1 and the B12 and the B6 would be high.
All right. Good. Okay. That's really helpful because it's like, yeah, they need it, but then I'm seeing, well, but then there's pretty high doses is what we're going through that the body can actually handle if their methylation pathways are okay.
If they are right, and it's really just the 12 and the folate that are methylated, so you don't have to worry about the others in terms of them. But sometimes if you overdo the B6, you can push them too much down the sulfur pathway, and if they have any imbalances in those sulfur pathways, instead of converting to glutathione, they may end up making sulfites and sulfates, which show up in the urine. So it's there's just a balancing act, right? It's not this straightforward thing that the supplement companies want us to believe in, just send everybody out the door and have them load up on these things, more is better. You really do have to take a lot of things into consideration, which is another reason I like using liquids or powders, because you can have really small doses and titrate up versus, you know, you got this 50 milligram B complex. It's got 50 milligrams of just about everything, and you put somebody on that, and now what was the problem here?
Yes, which is another reason why I have really been enjoying getting into reading the genetic stuff. It's been fascinating. I can't wait till we get into that nutrigenomics. Is it module?
Module. Yeah, it's going to be way, because I'm learning more and more all the time on that, and it's pretty fascinating. It's very fascinating. You know, one way to really learn this stuff a little bit is to get little descriptions without having to do all the individual click here and click there and go to GeneWorks and all these other places is there's a test with that metabolic healing does. And they what they do is you put the person's genome in there. So if you have anybody, you've done it with yourself, whatever. But they have descriptions, but they also, they don't just show the SNPs that are either heterozygous or homozygous. They also show a description for the normal ones. So it's a good learning tool, I think. The one from that Ben Lynch just came out with at seekinghealth.org is an awesome report, and I think it is my favorite so far. But it's not as good a learning tool because it only shows the descriptions for the SNPs that
Right.
Goes to the ones that are normal. And so you don't, you have to do a bunch of them before you see what they're saying. But it is a good tool. They're both really good tools. I like the descriptions are a little bit more detailed and also more in the way of now what lifestyle factors are going to affect these on the Seeking Health one. So if you have your own, have you done your own genome yet?
It is processing right now. I had a patient come in, and years ago she had got it through for all of her family members as a Christmas present, and her son-in-law was very offended and thought his mother-in-law was checking out his genes.
Before you marry my daughter, let's just do it beforehand and see how these kids are going to be okay. Yeah, it could be a good screening tool.
Yeah, so she had an extra one. So actually she sold it to me for $85. So I said, I'm going to have to do this eventually, so I might as well. So, yeah, it is being processed as we speak. I can't wait.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. And, you know, one of the things I'm just going to throw out there, and we'll repeat it during the methylation, the nutrigenomics module, but one thing I recommend is you all do is do it on yourself, number one, and get every screening tool they have out there right now. I mean, it may cost you an extra $150, $200, not even that much. To do them, but do them all, because it's just going to, the more you see it and you see your own and you can take the time with it, the more you're going to learn. So there's the genetic genie has two of them, really short, sweet ones. Some of them don't have descriptions, but good ones. And I have in that nutrigenomics piece right now, I have two charts that give you explanations of those. So those are great ones to start with. Metabolic healing one, which has all those nice descriptions, and it's about a 39-page report. So there's a lot of good detail there. And then the Seeking Health one, and I think it's at, they call it Strategene, Strategene. If you're a member of the Seeking Health professional organization, you get like 30% off or something when you run it. And then the last one would be the MTHFR support, which has a lot of the flow charts. And if you do those five reports, and Prometheus, that has a lot of good stuff, too. It's a lot harder to read. But if you do it on yourself, it's just like, why not, right? Why not use yourself as a learning tool to really explore what's going on in those? Make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
I first heard about this 3 years ago with my daughter-in-law. They couldn't have children. And she became, disabling anxiety. So they flew here from Chicago, and I was dealing with them. But I said, you know, there's more to this than just diet and just herbs. Something's going on. And we found a doctor, actually, in Chicago that ran tests. But I don't know what he ran, and I've been trying to get her to give me stuff. But that was the first time I'd ever heard of the MTHFR. And Once they started giving her folate, she conceived was like in 6 months.
That's amazing. That is gluten-free, right? Because gluten-free gluten will interfere with the conception. And I see people who may try the folate and they don't get it, but they go gluten-free. Or people will go gluten-free and say, wait, I thought, you know, gluten-free was supposed to help with this. And then the combination of the two is awesome. And her anxiety went down.
Yep. Yeah.
Amazing.
But she has to play with it. She's kind of like on her own because she's been like going to Dr. Lynch's site. But for someone that doesn't, you know, hasn't been trained in it, it's so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. It is, even if you've been trained in it. It is. A lot. I have both of his courses. No, did he do three? No, I missed his third one, but I have it on video. But I sat there one day. I was like, I'm going to watch his thing in the background while I'm doing this other stuff, and there was no way because I was stopping every couple of minutes to take notes. It's complex science, and it's in its infancy. So the more, you know, more you study, the more you learn. But it also, and he says this himself over and over again, you can't do it and use it as a tool that you're just going to, oh, what SNPs need what supplements, right? It's all about the foundational stuff. And when you really balance the foundations, the effect of those SNPs is going to be minimized. And then you know exactly what you need to be working on.
And I think that's awesome. I'm so thrilled to be really on this cutting edge with you.
Yay! Well, we're glad to be here with it. Totally. Totally. Great. That was
well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Melody. All right. Who else? So questions, comments. We're on, this is a foundations kind of a curriculum and content call. So any questions you have, Melody has some great questions about V vitamin supplementation. Any questions you might have about any of that, go ahead and raise your hand with a 2 on your telephone keypad. If you have a comment that you want to make just about some, you know, observation you've made at a particular thing, if you have suggestions like you want to make, we put them in our little parking lot for, oh, we really should create a handout like this for that. We have one handout that we have in our parking lot, which we're hoping to get help with the community in creating, is a handout which lists all the nutrients, but then all the, like one chart that has nutrients and the contraindications and the clinical approaches and what which ones go well with each other, because we get that a lot. And when you have to go sorting through lots, 20 hours or more of stuff, it's harder to find. So we're looking to put together one. So that was one suggestion that came out of one of these calls. So raise your hand. Any number from 1 to 5 works on your telephone keypad. Press it. That'll raise your hand, and you can get in. And if you don't have a question, an observation, or just a comment, okay, Laura. Let me open your line, Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Hi, Serena Marie.
Hey.
I had a question. It kind of goes with what you guys were talking about with the MTHFR SNPs and the folate and the methylated B12. Because I get a little bit confused, and I actually had a client today that came to see me, and she had both of the mutations for the MTHFR, and she's already gluten-free. And I had remembered from the B12 micronutrient lecture that you had said, I believe it was like sometimes doctors will just throw like methylated B12 on these people, and it can cause a lot of, like maybe they have other reactions, like anxiety or mood changes or different things.
Right.
And that's exactly what her doctor's plan was, you know, like take methylated B vitamins. And I couldn't remember, I just cautioned her, you know, to add them in slowly, and if she noticed any change in any kind of reaction or symptoms to let her doctor know and to, you know, back off. But I couldn't remember exactly why that happens in some people, and I guess kind of like the best approach to take in that situation. But you don't want to just like throw methylated B12 on everybody, but
right,
kind of do it in a gradual way.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done. Yeah, it's really, really important because a lot of the doctors are doing, this might be what Melody's daughter-in-law had done, was they just run through, you know, Quest or LabCorp or whatever, they just specifically run those SNPs. Or some people are running it through SpectraCell, which, by the way, it costs like $200 to get just those two SNPs run through SpectraCell, like and people were complaining that 23andMe raised their price to $197. It's like, really? I mean, really? You're getting like hundreds and thousands of these. But basically, there's some other SNPs. There's just some other pathways. So when you give too much methyl, they've got all these extra methyl groups that get trapped. They get trapped in reactions, and they can't be broken down. And it's specifically the things I've noticed are people who have issues with COMT, C-O-M-T, catecholamine O-methyl transferase, especially if they have homozygous, meaning the red ones, on that. And we don't know if all the doctor did was run those two SNPs. They also can have issues with something called BHMT, which is a shortcut through the middle of the pathway. They could have other issues in the pathways. And we described some of that in the thing. So what you told her was perfect, Laura. What you told her was to go very slowly, but don't just take capsules. That's where the problem is, because it's really hard to go slowly with a capsule. The capsule is or isn't, right? It's like five, and you're going to get them opening capsules, and patient compliance goes way down when you have them opening capsules and just taking a little bit out of it and closing it again. They don't know how to do that, right? So you get the liquids, and you start them with a couple of drops. And with the B12, whereas they really need the B12, sometimes starting them with no methyl and starting them with like adenosyl or hydroxy, just because those can be converted by the body, you know, a little bit more easily when they're in higher doses, even with those methyl. Because the methylation defects, right, or SNPs are not going to prevent 100% of the movement. So if you create more substrate, they can actually do it. So it's that other pathways might be blocked, and they don't know about it if all they've done is test MTHFR. So what you told her was perfect, to go really, really slowly. But really, I love getting the drops. I love the ones from Seeking Health just because they're so low dose.
Okay, that's helpful. Yeah, because that's exactly what her doctor did, was they just checked the SNPs. She hasn't had any other, you know, testing done. Is that something that then maybe you should recommend then, to do a 23andMe to check the COMT and see if it's homozygous or like some of the other pathways?
Yeah, there's two ways to do it, right? You get into this complexity of now what do you do, and now you have to read it with them, right? And if you don't feel super comfortable with it. But if they're willing to do it, yes. But the other way to do it is to just explain to them the downsides of it and work with them on how to do it differently. Take the liquid so that you can titrate it slowly. Watch for, and it's usually an anxiety, irritability. It has to do with pushing. It has to do with that COMT and its ability to break down dopamine and into norepinephrine or epinephrine, breaking down the epinephrine, I think, and you just get this hyper-excitability as a result. So, you can have them do that, or you could just tell them, let's move very, very slowly here.
Okay.
Depending on their openness.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again?
I said depending on their openness. Some people are like, I did this test already. I don't want to do any more. I don't want to spend any money because obviously it's not going to get covered by insurance, right?
Yeah. So then if they are having, like, anxiety, like they start the methylated B12 drops and they're having lots of anxiety, stopping them or slowing down on those, and then are there other ways that we can, I guess, like optimize their B12 and folate levels if they can't tolerate that?
Right. So the B on the B12, you can use adenosyl or hydroxycobalamin, one of those two.
Okay, that's what you were talking about. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And on the folate, I would just slow down and just use, you know, get them eating more green leafy vegetables. But to improve methylation overall, which is the end result of what we want to do here, is SAMe sometimes helps. SAMe goes into the pathway in a different place, and it provides the methyl groups without going through a blocked COMT pathway. That's another option to do.
Okay.
The other option is, I thought of it and then it dropped away. The other is just more of a prophylactic. If they get into that, like, or a Band-Aid, actually, if they just get into that spot where they're really anxious and you believe it's as a result of overmethylation, they could take a dose of niacin.
Of niacin?
Niacin, B3.
Niacin. Niacin.
And that tends to mop up the extra methyl groups. And you want to be careful in high-dose niacin in general with somebody with methylation because that's what it can tend to do. It can tend to mop up those methyl groups. But it's a good therapeutic in a sense of when they get over-methylated. Get methyl trapping.
Thank you. That helps. This is like complicated for me.
It was complicated for everybody. You know, I'm like going, like trying to remember all this from my brain, and, you know, I'm sure I'm oversimplifying it. But, yeah, it's complicated stuff, Laura. No, you know, no biggie, you know. Just like you'll learn it little by little, and you learn it as situations, right, come up with somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of point out, like I can look at people's supplements and go, oh, okay, you're taking cyanocobalamin. This is, like, not a good deal, or folic acid or something like that, and, like, give them better options to kind of upgrade their supplements to be higher quality. But, okay, well, that makes me feel good because I just remembered. I was like, you need to go slow. Like, I was trying to replay that as I'm talking to her, and I was like, I think since you're homozygous for this and this is going on, like, we need to go really slow with it and stop if you have reverse reactions. And
so she's homozygous for one of the MTH. I have never seen anybody homozygous for both. So if she's homozygous for both, boy, she's, yeah, a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah, and I didn't even know. I was just trying to think, like, well, and the stuff that I've read is different. Like, if you have one SNP, then maybe – you know, it's like 40% compromise. I heard different things, 40, 50%.
Yeah, there's different ranges. It just depends, yeah.
If she's got this on both.
Yeah, I would be questioning that because I personally have never seen it. I've never seen anyone that had even a homozygous on one and a heterozygous on the other. It's either they're heterozygous on both or homozygous on one of them. I've never, ever seen any. Body have a SNP on both. I mean, if they have it, it's probably like, you know, 1% of the population versus there's like close to 50% of the population is homozygous on at least one of them.
Okay. And really I'm probably, odd. I think I may be saying it wrong. She has a SNP on the 1298AC and then the 677CT.
Okay. And if they're both yellow, like, you know, one gene from mom, you know, good from dad, or
they're both yellow.
You would say she's double heterozygous.
Double heterozygous.
Heterozygous, okay. Right. And if they're red, if they've got, you know, SNPs from both parents, then you would say they're homozygous.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a terminology thing, but yeah. But you want to be clear because if you said that to me and I'm like, what, homozygous on both? I don't know anybody. I think I asked Ben Lynch that. Have you ever seen anybody homo? He said, no. Because I think nature filters those people out early on.
She is double heterozygous.
Double heterozygous, yeah. She's double heterozygous. And, you know, it's funny. You know, we say double heterozygous because we're oversimplifying it. There's probably 7 or 8 different MTHFR SNPs, but the common ones are those two, the ones that we know clinically create a lot of problems.
Mm.
So it's heterozygous on the two main MTHFR SNPs. That's how I would say it. But the other ones that are related to the B12, also you have to look at are MTR and MTRR. And there's BHMT, which, you know, kind of does a shortcut. So you see, you know, I'm throwing out all these acronyms, and it's complicated. It's all explained if you go through the 17 or 20 or whatever number of hours of nutrigenomics I have up on the ERC site, you start to get that sense. But there's a lot to it, you know, there's a lot to it. So it's more than just MTHFR. It's the MTRRs, there's the CBS, there's all of these things. When you look at those pathways and you see all the different places where it can go wrong. And so, yeah, for a lot of people, just putting them on methylfolate when they have MTHFR SNPs can be life-saving, but for other people it just throws them in. And I don't want to make it out that most people are going to have this issue of over-methylating because it's not true. But you want to know about it as a potential so that you can be cautioning people because you don't want them to hate you and say, you know, I almost killed my baby yesterday because I took these B vitamins you told me to take.
Mm. Yeah. Things, important things and red flags to look at.
Absolutely. And there's just a lot to it. And by the time we actually do put that final, we have, you know, pieces of that, it's going to be so much more because I've learned so much more since when I originally put it together.
Yeah, it's. I may have to go back.
I would run. Did you run it on you, Laura? Did you run it on yourself?
Yeah. I have a snip on the 1298.
So what would be really helpful is if you, you know, spend the whatever $35 a test or $40 a test to do it, but get the metabolic healing one. And the Stratagene from Ben Lynch's site. And just run them on yourself and just kind of start to put it together because he does a lot of good explanations in there. And it's just, you know, the more you learn, the more you read about them, the more it sticks, and the better off you're going to be when people come in.
Yeah, that's helpful because I did do my 23andMe. I think I uploaded in the MTHFR support.
Yep.
But I missed, like, when they did the upgrade, so I need to go back and upload it again and see what that's
They don't have all the descriptions. So they do on some, you click it. If you do it on the online version of that report, if you click, you can see on some of them a little video that describes it, and that's really cool. But it's just on a small percentage. And then others, you can see a little text thing when you click it. But they don't have as much really, I don't think, practical tutorial type explanations as the metabolic healing and the Stratagene. I like those both better.
Okay. And that was, I'm sorry, I guess I'm not familiar with the Stratagene.
Lynn put them in the chat.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Then I'll just copy and paste them from
there. Yeah, just copy and paste them out of there. Yeah. And these are hot off the press. The Ben Lynch one, the Stratagene, I mean, literally came out maybe 3 weeks ago. And I ran it almost the day it came out, and I ran it on somebody, and I found it really helpful.
Nice.
I mean, they have practical stuff like, with this snip, this person shouldn't take more than a tablespoon of chocolate a day. I mean, that's real practical, right?
Because then
you don't have to go to somebody and say, well, you've got this snip, and, you know, you really shouldn't eat chocolate, and then they want to, right? And you go, no, it gives some practical stuff. And I know he's just going to keep making them better and better.
Oh, that's awesome. And then I don't know if this is the right caller platform for this, but I had a client email me who was concerned, and honestly, I hadn't seen this before, and I didn't know what to tell her. But her creatine and her AST, like, everything was really high. Like, her AST was 60. And I thought, oh, my gosh.
Was the ALT also 60 or high?
22.
So it's just the AST. Now, I frequently, without having my cheat sheet in front of me, mix up the two of them. One is very specific to liver, and the other one may have some other implications like cardio and bone and such. So I would go back to look those up, either put them into or just go into the blood chem software. And put those in or go into my spreadsheet. Yeah?
I did that today, yeah.
Okay. And what did they because there's a specific, and I'm off the top of my head not remembering when one of them's high, the other one's not, there's a specific thing you want to look at, like fatty liver versus.
Yeah, because this was saying more, like she was really, really concerned about her kidneys. When I put it into the blood chemistry, it was saying more like, coronary artery insufficiency and congestive heart dysfunction and like some other things going on. And she was kind of like, what do I need?
Kidney stuff. So it could be, you know, cardiac and kidney are so closely related, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet you can get congestive heart failure as a result of a problem with kidneys. So I would be looking at that, but you also want to look at other markers. How is her BUN? What's her bun creatinine ratio? How is her protein albumin and all that? So if you put her whole lab in, then there's some good interpretations there. But, you know, we want to just say, oh, it's AST or ALT. It must be liver, but it's not necessarily. It's how it compares with the other markers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Welcome. Other questions, comments? So far, so a very interesting discussion. Also, all I need to do is to press any number from 1 to 5 on your telephone keypad. You can ask questions about any of the content modules we've had so far, any how that relates to clients. Comments? Okay, any questions about anything at all? And we'll just open it up since I'm not getting any related to that. So any of that at all. Or how you can best study, you know, what's your best approach, looking for a study buddy, anything at all. Any number from 1 to 5? Look on the chat to see if anybody's got questions in there. Lynn's been putting up things. You know, last week we also had a lot of questions on methylation. So Lynn put up some things related to the B vitamins. And then she put up metabolic healing interpretation and then the seeking health methylation analysis and the MTHFR support. Okay, good. We have a couple more questions. So we have Isabel, and then I'll go to Laura again. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry I missed you in San Diego last week. It was a whirlwind. I never got out of the hotel.
Oh, I figure that. Yeah, I figure that. Yeah, so I'm glad you had a good time. Yeah.
All right.
Hello.
You today. I'm here. Can you hear me still?
Okay, yes, I can hear you. So, actually, I just took my daughter and I got her lab result back, and she is a little bit high on her iron, and which is, I haven't done research yet, so I was just wondering, you know, some of the insights on, you know, what would some of the causes for higher iron?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's, you know, it's iron, and you have to look at some other. So did you do ferritin as well? So did she have high ferritin, low ferritin?
Ferritin, let me see if she has a high. According, I plug her number in into the software, it's 78. So it wasn't in the master tracker, it's not marked as high.
It's on the high. Well, it's on the higher side. It's not like she has low.
It's on the higher side.
Yeah, it's on the higher side. Okay.
Yes.
She's not in a range where I would say, ooh, maybe she has hemochromatosis, but she's also, what, 18, 19?
She's 18, yes.
Young, so it may not show. So I would certainly, have you done her genetics? Do you know if she has a gene for hemochromatosis?
I haven't done her genetic. I've done my, but I don't know which gene to look at.
Oh, you'd have to look.
My.
I don't know off the top of my head what it is, but you'd have to just look, do a search and say hemochromatosis SNPs or genes. And
okay.
I know that the 23andMe does report on them because if they be allowed to do their report, they would say whether you had a higher than normal risk of hemochromatosis or whether you're heterozygous or homozygous. You could look that up as well. But she don't have her genes anyway, so it doesn't matter. You could look at yours because if you're you're not homozygous, you'd know it. So you'd know if there was even a risk of her being able to have that. So then she's got high iron. How high is high?
Let me see. Her iron is, let me see. It's the UIBC. Wait, hold on. Iron saturation 60.
What about serum iron?
Serum iron, let me see, serum, it's 154, so it's on the high side.
So the first thing you want to rule out reports with high iron, high ferritin, or high-ish ferritin is to look at hemochromatosis as a potential. I mean, certainly you don't diagnose, they never diagnose hemochromatosis until, like, the ferritin goes up above, you know, 200. You know, if it's something that if you have other previous tests that she has, and you can go back and see if it's rising. Now, the other issue is you always have to rule out, are they just taking too much iron? And that happens sometimes, you know, iron overload. So it's just looking.
Yeah, she's not taking. I've been giving her supplements and stuff. So she is not taking any iron supplements.
Yeah, so it's not iron.
She's not taking any additional iron supplements.
And
the funny thing is, I think back in May or in April when she went to donate blood, she was low. She said she couldn't donate blood because I don't know what measurement they did. She was just a little bit under of what required.
So what's her hematocrit? These are other numbers I was going to get to. So.
Oh, okay. Hematic.
So an iron situation, just as a review, whenever you're looking at the iron status, anemia status relationship to iron, yeah, you can look at iron. Yeah, you can look at ferritin. You can look at iron binding capacity and all that. But you also have to look at what's the manifestation, the physiologic functional manifestation is how well is how good is her hemoglobin or hematocrit. So when you tell me that she wasn't able to give blood, I want to look at her hematocrit because that's usually what they do. They just do this little drop thing, and it just is a wrong estimate. And then if that's low, then they actually spin it in a centrifuge. And then they do, I think if it's below 39 or something, they won't take it. Something in the
okay.
Seven, so.
Okay, so she's her hemocrat is 37.3.
What about her hemoglobin?
Hemoglobin is 12.
They're all low. So what about her what about her MCV, mean corpuscular volume?
MCV. Hold on. MCV, 68.
68?
Yeah, 68. So she has, I have thalassemia, so I'm thinking she does.
Thalassemia.
Yeah.
Likely has thalassemia, and that's how you get into a situation with tiny cells and iron. And she may have a tendency towards the other, but it's basically she's not able to take the iron from the blood and get it into the cells in order to be able to make the hemoglobin. One thing that could possibly help with that would be vitamin B6 because it's required to take the iron and incorporate it into hemoglobin. So that's one thing. Make sure she's not taking any extra iron.
Okay.
Vitamin E can be helpful as well.
Okay.
Studies that show that it can be helpful. Yeah, see what we just did, right? We looked at, well, she has high iron. We're thinking, oh, iron overload, et cetera. Now we're looking at her cells. They're teeny tiny, right? 68 is MCV. So that's totally inconsistent with high iron, high serum iron, right, iron deficiency anemia. And then we looked at the hematocrit and hemoglobin, and those are both low, functionally low. So she's not actually utilizing her iron. And when you have high iron like that and it's not being utilized, it can be deposited in the liver. And it's also fuel for oxidation reactions. So it feeds microbes when you have high iron in the blood. So you got to be careful with that.
Okay.
Hydrating, so she's losing blood on a regular basis, but she still has high iron. So, so let's think about this for a second. What other approaches? Does she have normal?
So she, yeah.
Okay. She's not overbleeding or underbleeding.
No, she's not. She's pretty regular.
And how is her energy? Does she have low energy?
She's pretty good. She has some thyroid issues in the past, so she's taking Armour. And so that have actually, we tested her thyroid markers, and it actually, her thyroid, according to the test, is pretty good. Her numbers are pretty good right now.
So her T3, free T3, is up above 3?
Yes. Yeah, it was like 1.9 before, so it's above 3. It's 3.3, still on the low side, but it's 3.3.
3 is fine.
Yeah.
Talking 3T3, yeah, 3.3 is fine. You don't want it to get too high either. So she, let's see, and you did this by, did you put her on thyroid medication or you just did it through nutrition?
Through Suicide Armor. Yeah, she threw medication. We did some nutrition. I have her taking some supplements, taking selenium and some of the B vitamins, and also with Armor.
Yeah, cause
so she wasn't taking
it.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Yeah.
Also taking what?
The B vitamins. So
a B complete
B vitamin.
Yeah, and she's consistent with that.
Yeah, she was consistent with that for about 2 months. Yeah.
So you need to go back to always answering the question why. So this is an 18-year-old girl. Why is her thyroid not working properly? What's going on? So I'm assuming you tested antibodies?
Yes, antibody was negative.
Negative, okay.
Yes, and she had a pituitary, benign pituitary tumor suspected when she was 9. So we did, she did a biopsy that turned out to be normal, benign. So she had some pituitary issues when she was little and caused precocious puberty.
Oh.
Yeah. And she was on Lupron, so I'm thinking maybe the Lupron have some effect on the thyroid.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so once you get into all that, that's too complicated for us to, like, really go through today. I don't want to see everything. But
So that's kind of the history.
So that would explain a lot of it. But it, definitely the antibodies are low. And how's her diet? Is she on a decent diet?
She was. She was working with me. She was. And now she's going to college, actually, tomorrow. So last month she's been, like, eating, like, whatever, junk. Yeah. Hopefully when she, you know, when she gets school starts, she knows that all that food that she had was junk. But hopefully she'll get back on a, you know, healthier diet, making better choices.
When you tested her antibodies, had she been on the healthier diet or was she on more of a junk diet?
She was on average, not like strict, but on pretty, I would think, on the healthier side,
Being gluten and dairy and sugar?
Not exclusive, not completely, but maybe gluten once a week or twice a month, something like that.
Okay.
Not
trying to get a sense
not completely.
If she was off of all that and you had the antibodies tested, they may have dropped down.
No, she didn't. She wasn't off completely.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's some relationship here with that pituitary thing. But as far as the iron is concerned, she most likely has thalassemia. Given that you have thalassemia minor.
What's the difference? I don't know about minor.
It genetically it's heterozygous versus homozygous. Most likely you have minor. You haven't had to have transfusions or anything like that. It's genetically passed in my family. I happen to skip it, thank goodness. But a lot, you know, of all my siblings, probably 75% of them have that.
Okay.
So 75% is a substantial number. And one of them has that, plus the hemochromatosis, which is what brought that up. And he wasn't diagnosed with the hemochromatosis until he was in his 30s. It is a cult. Mm-hmm. So it is something I would be watching for, and the way I would approach it right now would be to definitely get her off any supplements that have iron, you take her off of, because you don't want to get into iron.
Okay.
Get her on some vitamin B6 so she can more effectively use that. And I would go higher doses than would be in a B-complex. I'd probably go with maybe 25 to 50 milligrams of pyridoxal 5-phosphate and just see if that makes a difference. I would be monitoring her maybe every 4 or 5 months just to retest to see if it's any better. So it's, you know, it's one of these paradoxes, right, where she has iron deficiency anemia with high serum iron and high iron indicators, high ferritin, et cetera. So you really just want to watch that. If it's starting to edge up that way, then you know, you just be very careful about the foods. If she eats a lot of red meat, I'd be cutting it back because that has a lot of iron in it. So I would be cutting it back. You can get her off of that. There's a lot of teenagers are out there eating their hamburgers, right, a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I'd be careful with red meat with her and any high iron foods, right? I wouldn't be putting her on foods that are really high in iron. I mean, she needs iron, but You don't want her to get in an overload situation, and clearly she has it. What you really want to be improving is her ability to utilize that to improve the blood, the oxygen carrying capacity. So the B6 could be very helpful. Probably an overall B complex plus a B6 is what I would do with her.
Okay.
Vitamin C can be very helpful in that regard.
Okay.
So make sure she keeps up her status, especially while she's at school, because, you know, being at school like that, it's much more prone to infectious stuff when you're in those close-knit capacities and stressed out all the time. So I'd really up her B or C. And those are the things I could think of off the top of my head for checking. If there's anybody else who has more experience with this on the call who wants to put their two cents in, I'd be happy to open up your line. Just go ahead and raise your hand with a, if I can find my face again. Where is it?
Yeah, when she was tested 6 months ago, back in November, her iron saturation was 49. Yeah, so it jumped.
Definitely jumped. What changed dietarily or supplementation-wise since then?
I gave her a supplement. I've been giving her, rhodiola. I think she was on rhodiola. She was doing selenium, B-complex, fish oil. And those are the supplements. And I also, I tested, she has candida overgrowth, so she was on intestinal, the health horse.
Yep.
Yeah, so she did one bottle of that. And that's all the supplement that she took.
Yeah, so nothing, you didn't give her like high doses of spirulina or green powders or...
Oh, no, she wouldn't, no.
She wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I would keep monitoring it and just get her to eat as well as she possibly can. Avoid the overdosing it. Avoid taking, like, one of those one-a-days with a lot of iron. It's possible. I mean, it's likely that she has a thalassemia, for sure, because... they're going to be small. But vitamin E and B6, and then just kind of do some searching. There may be some new stuff that's, you know, new studies or whatever on how to increase the hematocrit and hemoglobin for people with thalassemia. She doesn't have terrible numbers with her hematocrit and hemoglobin. I mean, I don't know where yours might be, but I know some of my siblings are down in the 8s to 10 on hemoglobin.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pretty low. But they, do standard American crap diets and all that.
Yeah.
Kind of. So,
Yeah, I think my numbers are like hers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for everybody else, the learning experience with this one, when we see a consistent pattern that we'd expect, if we're seeing a high serum iron, would be a higher hematocrit, right? Because we're not going to see a deficiency. So low serum iron, you're going to see low hematocrit. Low hematocrit, hemoglobin, but also MCV, the size. So when we're deficient in iron, the blood cells get smaller, and that's what MCV measures. When we're deficient in the B vitamins and all, we're seeing much larger. In this case, we wouldn't expect to see high iron numbers and low hemoglobin and, you know, all the CBC numbers. So that's where I was going down that pathway of what this is going on and thinking through possibly some genetic factors there. And you got to just be careful of iron overload because it can be bad, dangerous.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Me thinking on my feet here. All right. So anybody else? Anybody have anything they want to add to that or question about that particular case? Go ahead and start to it. I'd love to hear from. Who we have our medical chat and. Phyllis and Allison, if you have any, from a medical perspective, what would you be looking at in that particular case? Or are they just saying, oh, who knows? I don't know. I'd be love to hear that if you have any perspectives on it. So I'm going to open up Laura again. Hey, Laura.
Hey. I wanted to ask a personal question about compounded T3. And this is something that, you know, after listening to Dr. Wilson's talk and, oh, gosh, I just totally, like, resonated with that because even though my TSH looks normal, my reverse T3 is always very high and I was still kind of losing a large amount of hair. I have a lot of hair, so it's not noticeable, but like in the shower, a lot of hair is coming out, and just different issues. So I kind of begged my functional medicine doctor to try the compounded T3 because my body temps have still been pretty low. And I was on WP thyroid, and we are keeping that the same on 97.5 milligrams of that. And he said to add in the T3 gradually until I start to, you know, notice symptoms of like a hyperthyroid, and then we can back off slowly the WP thyroid. Well, I add in like 5 milligrams every week, and I'm up to like 15 now and still not noticing a change or noticing like symptoms of hyper. Like I've just been kind of monitoring my pulse and different things like that.
They're the main thing. Are your temps going up?
Not dramatically or anything. You know, maybe slightly since I started, but they're still kind of low. It's interesting though, like before I got the cancer, they were like really low, like 96
yeah.
point stuff.
Yeah.
So now they're kind of coming up since then. Like I'm in the 97, like low 97s now.
And that's like, you know how to take the temperature properly for that, right? Where you take the three readings starting 3 hours after you're up every 3 hours for 3 days and then average it.
Okay, maybe I need to do that better because I've just been taking like my morning.
Yeah, no, morning won't really give you the same. Yeah, that's your basal, and you really want to see your metabolic. So I would definitely do it. Sometimes the basal doesn't come up very much, but the metabolic does. So I usually have the chart that I have on the thyroid. It's in the TRT, the Thyroid Revive and Thrive
uh-huh.
program, and it's a chart which basically says, okay, here's your first morning. If you take it, because that's a good basal. But then you also measure the 3 hours after you're up every 3 hours for three times, and then average those three, and then do it across 3 days just to see. Of course, women, you know, if you're menstruating, it's going to be very different, and you've got to make sure you're doing it before ovulation, not after ovulation, et cetera. But it's really, for the basal anyway, for some of this, but it's a comparison, right? So here's the thing, 15 micrograms once a day, twice a day, is time release regular?
Well, it was just once a day in the morning. Like, I was taking everything in the morning. And then when I talked to the compounded pharmacist, he had suggested, because where I have my energy crashes is around 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. So he had suggested to take 10 milligrams in the morning with the WP thyroid and then do 5 at 10 a.m. He said it was really going to be a lot of trial and error. To figure out the right dose and figure out the right time, like maybe even doing it at 2 p.m. or maybe even doing it like 12 hours apart. And I was just kind of feeling like, oh, my goodness. Like
there's
I'm
a lot to it.
Sense.
Yeah, and if you go online,
yeah.
Wilson has a whole doctor manual for free as an online manual, and I'd highly recommend that you look through that. But here's the issue. Number one, 15 micrograms a day is a minuscule dose. So that's first
okay.
one. In the Wilson's protocol, he starts people generally with 7.5 micrograms twice a day, and it's 12 hours exactly apart, and it's time release. Because the half-life of T3 is very, very short, so you're going to get erratic changes this way. So you're only going to be actually utilizing, if you're just taking it in the morning, you've only got that, and it's not time release. You've got that for maybe 3 or 4 hours in your system, and then it's gone. So you're not going to see that dramatic shift, but especially not the first morning, right? If you're taking temps in the morning and you haven't taken that thing for 24 hours, it's gone. So that's first of all. Second of all, if you've got high reverse T3 and you stay on your armor or WP, whatever, you're going to continue to have high reverse T3 because the T4 is being converted into the reverse T3 instead of the T3, which is why Wilson usually recommends doing get off of it completely for several days and then he has you just do the T3. You don't have to do the just T3, but if you lower that dose and you at least do that for some length of time, what you're going to do, it's called drain the T3, the reverse T3, I mean. There's no T4 to be converting to it. There's only what you're making. Obviously, you're going to be making some, but you're not getting all that extra. You're on, what'd you say, 95?
97.5
of the
WP.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you know, you're kind of doing a weird combo of that, and I've seen people who've just been done that before, and I don't see that it's as effective because they don't actually drain their reverse T3. So his protocol is actually where you're using time-released T3 and you're taking it 12 hours to the minute apart. You find your two times and then you just do it away from food by an hour. And you are gradually building it up. So you start with 7.5 twice a day, which is the dose you're at right now. And that's just a minuscule dose. We very rarely see anything happening there. And usually we don't start to see any shifts until people get up to like the, you know, 30, 50, 75.
Oh, okay.
So you can play with this, but the first of all, it would be ask them if it's time release. That's one thing. And then do it in split doses.
Sustained release.
It is. Good. Okay, good.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Then I would do it 12 hours apart, one in the morning, one in the evening. Okay. And you said 10 and 2 is when you get the issues with the energy.
Yeah,
drain.
That's when I noticed that I really tend to crash. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost tending to want you to take your Westroid. And again, I'm not your doctor, so I'm, you know what I mean? I'm just kind of giving you some from my understanding of the protocol and my experience with it. My guess would be you take your, T3 in the morning and the evening, 12 hours apart, however you work that out, and then in that middle, you take your T4, your Restoric, your T3 combo, okay? Yeah, so you're not going to be able to wean down. I mean, you could go off of it for several days, and knowing that you're probably going to feel tired, but I've had people go off of it, and it didn't feel any different. They built it up. But the easiest way right now with what you're doing is to split it, do 7.5 both times, make sure it's sustained release, but make sure you're to the minute 12 hours apart. Huge difference.
Okay.
And then start taking your temps and see. But that would be the easiest thing right now. And then you can play with, well, do I do better with the Westroid in the morning or in the afternoon? It's Westroid is WPs, right? Or is it something different?
Yeah, I think that is.
Yeah,
I think so. So, like, if I take it at 7 a.m. and then I don't have breakfast till 8 a.m., and then, like, if I typically eat dinner at 6 p.m., I probably couldn't take that at – would that be enough time in between to take that at 7, I guess? I know you have to wait an hour after.
Yeah, can you move your dinner back a half hour?
Eat
from 5:30 to 6 and then wait an hour. Or you can do it a little later, right? So just – start do your morning dose a little bit later. Do it at 7:30 instead of 7, and then do it at 7:30 at night, and that gives you plenty of time. And then,
okay, yeah, that's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I would do, and just keep the WP in the morning as is now. Just only change one variable at a time. This is something you want to learn with working with people: is don't change too many things because then you don't know how to measure the response. So always one variable. You're always changing one variable at a time. You do that, you see how that feels. If you want to play with then the timing of the WP, then you move that. And then once you've been doing that, you can increase. Now, according to Wilson's protocol, he has people increase every day or every 2 days at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And it's increasing by 7.5 each time. Sometimes he works with people who are so sensitive that he actually makes them do like the, you know, 3.75s and does those. But most people 7.5. That's really tiny. So I don't think you're taking enough of it for it to make a huge difference.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better because I know at least with when I was on the Armor and the Nature Throid and different things, like little increments make a big difference. And when I was like going up by 5 every week and nothing's happening, I thought, what's going on?
Yeah.
So that's
and your body adapts too. So here's the thing, and this is always my issue, my concern with taking a thyroid medication, the negative feedback loop, right? So you go up, your TSH goes down. And if you're not monitoring it, you don't know. Your pituitary is saying, oh, okay, no big deal. We don't need to stimulate anymore. So as you increase it, it shuts it down. And when you have that long a period of time, you allow for that adaptation. And so you may be just have shut down your own production, and what we really want to do is stimulate your own production. And that's the beauty of the Wilson protocol, is that it actually stimulates your body, and that up and down, you know, he goes up cycles, down cycles, it actually stimulates your thyroid to produce better.
Mm.
So you're suppressing at the higher doses, and then when you come back down and you do it in that gradual fashion, then your body's kicking, oh, we better produce a little bit more thyroid today. Oh, we got to produce a little bit more thyroid today. Oh, and it's like a muscle. You're exercising it over 2 or 3 or 4 months of cycling like that, and it eventually kicks in and goes, oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong with this thyroid. It's just been suppressed for too long.
Mm.
Right. And how long have you been on thyroid medication? Was it before the cancer, before you changed all your diet habits, et cetera, or after?
No, it was after the cancer. And what was interesting was before the cancer, I kept telling them that something was wrong with my thyroid. And they were like, no. And the fascinating thing, and I finally got a doctor who was willing to listen, and what was happening was week to week, my TSH was jumping all over the place. It was up, it was down, it was up, it was down. And then it wasn't until, and I just kept feeling like something was off with that, it wasn't until it finally, like, was over 5 that they were like, oh, okay, maybe something's off with this. Oh.
Were you gluten-free and dairy-free, sugar-free and all that stuff back then?
I had done it for, like, 6 months and then got the cancer. And so I think it just wasn't enough time that I had been on it, because I had started getting sick and then went gluten, dairy, sugar, like went on a yeast protocol.
Right.
And that was my red flag, was I continued to gain weight eating clean, like when I cleaned up my diet significantly. So that kind of did help me kind of cue in. I knew that something was wrong. I didn't think it was cancer. I just thought it was that my thyroid was having issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you've been through a lot. Your body's been through a lot of invasive stuff as well, a lot of, you know, surgeries and the hip and all, you know, so much stuff, so much your poor young little body has gone through. And so it's, you know, it's hard to compare what really worked and what didn't. So whenever I see TSH down like that, and this is just something, a clue, whenever I see TSH going up and down, I'm thinking antibodies, Hashimoto's. Have you tested your antibodies?
Yeah, they were elevated a couple years ago, but they've come down significantly. And I think it wasn't like a really specific test, but it was one of those like less than, I think less than 10 or less than 20 on the lab, and it was in that range. So they've improved tremendously over the years.
Good. Okay, so you're on the right track there. Yeah, so, you know, my tendency, and again, I'm not a medical doctor, I don't have prescription rights, you're not my patient, but if I was thinking about this logically from a physiologic biochemical standpoint, I'd be thinking, okay, rather than keep the level of the Armor or whatever Westroid the same, I would be I would increase the T3, and then I would go down on the T4, and then I would go up on the T3. So I think you just need to go up more quickly on the T3 so that you can get to a point where you can decrease it.
Okay.
That's what my gut feeling is.
Yeah,
and again, talk to your doctor about that. You know, because when it's that slow, it allows for adaptation. And I'm really concerned that the adaptation is your thyroid saying, oh, we don't have to work so hard. Or your pituitary saying, oh, thyroid, you don't have to work so hard because we got all this T3 now. And it slows it down.
Mm-hmm.
And you allow for that slow adaptation versus when you do this rapidly. It doesn't allow for that adaptation. It just is like, oh, hurry up, make more, hurry up, make more. And you will see the TSH going up, but I don't even look at the TSH when I'm doing a Wilson. It's like, you know, yeah, the TSH is going to go up and the free T3 is going to go up. I mean, the TSH is going to go way down and the free T3, but then when you're in the downward cycle, it's going to be the opposite. And it's just going to be off for a few months of cycling. Don't know, you know, enough about whether you're the perfect candidate for this because, you know, if there's something physiologically wrong with your thyroid, then, you know, this is not necessarily going to do it, but I've seen a lot of results with it.
Yeah.
The other thing
yeah.
is Dr. Wilson talked to me about, you know, and I had a private conversation after our public one that when he did that, is I was asking him, is this picking his brain? And he basically said, with his supplement, that Thyroid Care PX or whatever, that there's two of them, the Thyroid Care and the Thyroid PX, and one of them has a lot of iodine, one just has a tiny bit. But he was talking about just gradually using that and watching the temps and seeing how it went up. And I have one person who, she's off her thyroid medication now, and her antibodies are almost zero, and her thyroid numbers are perfect, and they've been maintaining for 6 months. So there's, you know,
wow. The
diet changes as well, the gluten, dairy, and all that, but it was a big deal was getting her on this thyroid PX, too. I think we did the thyroid care. So there's a number of things. Did you ever do an iodine load?
No.
So you know what your iodine status is, too. And you eat sea vegetables regularly, though, right?
Yeah, I do. I love them.
So, you know, there's all those other factors. But long story short, that's where I would go with it.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Okay. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Been a good call. Anybody want to just, like, share a takeaway? Like, one takeaway they got from here? Raise your hand. Any number from 1 to 5, share a takeaway, something that you've learned and want to back to your practice? No? Any comments from Chet or Phyllis or Allison about what would be medically the approach if someone came in with the high iron, high ferritin, low hemoglobin, hematocrit, and MCV? Shrugging? Okay, well, good. We'll have a great rest of the week. I'm looking at our calendar to see when our next get-together is Thursday, actually. Yeah, Thursday I have we have the core content call where we're going to actually do a presentation, and this one's going to be on sleep. We'll get as much of the sleep presentations that I put together. I have 4 different sections to the sleep module, and we'll get at least the first one, if not the first and the second one, done on Thursday. So have a great rest of the week. I look forward to talking to you guys soon. I'm going to open up your lines, and we can all say goodbye to each other on the count of 3. Let's see. Probably 1.
Bye.
3. Bye. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.